This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
I have a feeling we're about to embark upon a most unprecedented expedition.
Everyone, and welcome to the second episode of Stacey and Elliot's
Bogus Journey,
a show where two very different wrestling fans each pick one of their favorite matches to show the other, and we come here and discuss them and see what we thought. I'm your co-host Stacey, and for greatest wrestler ever, I did in fact vote Trish Stratus higher than William Regal, Fujiwara, and El Satanico, and the relevance of me saying this will become apparent in just a moment. How you doing, Elliot?
I'm doing well, thank you. And I knew you ranked Trish above Satanico, but Regal and Fujiwara too. That's brutal.
Yeah, that was a murderous row of guys.
That's just
below Trish. I think Akiyama and like someone else, like Fujinami maybe, I don't know.
It's like just my top whole, 10.
Yeah. Basically, yeah. Trish is better than all of them, and today we're going to talk about one of the reasons why. Should we say what we're talking about?
Sure, yeah.
Our matches today, well, my match, I guess, we'll say, is Trish Stratus versus Mickey James at WrestleMania 22. And your match is...
My match is, I'll see if I can pronounce them, Gilbert Cheska versus Billy Catanzaro from 1960s French Catch. We don't have a date. It's just magically on YouTube for all of us to love.
Yeah, sometime in the 60s.
Sometime in the 60s. So couldn't possibly be two more different matches on the surface.
One,
the height of the Divas era at a WrestleMania, and then the other, this match that none of us knew existed until, what, like 2 years ago? A year ago?
From obscure French wrestling in the 60s, so, yeah. You know, they're similar, but it's good, it's a good contrast, I think.
It's a good representation for what we wanted to do from the start.
Exactly, yeah, definitely.
Two most opposite things we can think of. I think we wanted to talk about Trish and Mickey James first. And this is, you know, it's a match that I had never seen, but it's a match that you ranked in your top 100 of all time, didn't you?
I did, yes. I think I'd have to go back and check, but it's in my top 5 of all time.
I was going to say, isn't it like your 4 or something crazy?
Probably 4, yeah. It's probably my favorite women's match of all time. And that's, you know, and that's saying something. And I mean, like, it's probably...
Even now? Even with all the Sasha and Charlotte
Yes, I still will say that. Because, I mean, you know, the one from your childhood, you know what I mean? It's the one that sticks with you the most, I guess. Because, like, the Trish versus Mickey, well, the Trish and Mickey storyline when it happened, like, right from the beginning, it was my favorite ever thing that had ever happened, like, in wrestling. I cannot explain how much I love this, like, week to week, when Mickey first came in as Trish's, like, number one fan, and then stalker, and then, you know, sexual predator, and then...
Not an angle you're ever gonna see again.
No, probably not.
Angle you're ever gonna see again.
Yeah, this is pre-PG. I'll tell you that. And yeah, and it just, and like, I could probably recite what happened in this angle week to week from beginning to end from memory, because I was 15 at this point, and I'd been on the internet like talking about wrestling for, you know, maybe a year or even less than a year when this started, and so I was sort of a budding smark as well as, like, you know, a teenage lesbian, and so this was like, you know, my dream come true, basically.
Right.
You know? It was amazing. Like, we all, like, lived through Mickey during this point when she got to like feel up Trish, and I think me more than most people. So.
Oh my god, that's awesome.
So I love the angle a lot, and I loved their first match as well, the one they had at New Year's Revolution, which is also a great match, by the way. And yeah, and then it all sort of culminated in them getting a big WrestleMania title match. So, and then here we are.
And now I feel like I have to go back and watch New Year's Revolution, because this was a really good fucking match.
it rather was, yes.
Really? I'm not going to lie.
I think so.
Not going to lie. I was questioning it the whole time. I was like, oh, there's no way. There's no way. And you're totally right. This was really good. People need to watch this stuff. People should definitely check this out. But did you, so let's talk about the match. Did you want to talk about the pre-match video?
I'm glad you saw the pre-match video, because it probably explains sort of generally what was happening.
Like, yeah.
You know, and she was stalking Trish, and then she turned on her when Trish rejected her and blah, blah. But yeah, it just, oh, the video is amazing, because like, oh, they made some good videos back then.
They really did. I mean, that's one thing that is terrible. You can take the worst WWE storyline, and they can figure out a way to make a good video out of it. They really can.
They can, because you know what? The Cena versus Orton feud in 2009, which is something literally nobody wanted to see ever. They made a video for the Iron Man match, before the Iron Man match, and it's just the most amazing video you've ever seen, and you watch it, and you would think this is, like, the greatest feud in the history of this company, the way they put it together. It's just so amazing. And the feud was, like, nobody cared about it at all. It was shit.
Oh my God.
They can make magic. But this was actually, like, a really good angle, and, like, it sums it up, basically, very well, I feel.
It's an angle they can never do again. I mean, I hate to like judge the whole thing just based on the internet, just based on the one, you know, pre-match video that I saw. So I don't want to say that it's like, oh, it was great, an all-time great, whatever. But like, this is a solid video. It was, obviously the crowd was super, super into the angle because of their reaction in the match and how into it they were. But just again, the whole time, like, rewatching it or watching it for the first time now in 2017, it's like, God, they can't ever do this again.
Yeah, because like
they would get killed if they did anything like this now.
Oh yeah, they got the girls making out. They got Mickey like perving on her in the shower, which was like, you look at that now and you're just like, that's sexual harassment. Like, they can't do that anymore. Like, yeah, you know, exactly. But like, it was 2005. They didn't, you know, they and also the blood when Mickey attacked Trish and kicked her, like, oh, did her DDT or whatever, and there's like blood pouring out of her mouth, and then she gives her the bloody kiss.
That was awesome.
That was like the big go home angle, and she fucking nailed it. And the blood, like, is accidental, obviously, out of her nose, but it made it so much better.
She
looked
awesome.
So fucking mental when she did that.
Totally insane.
Mickey was so good.
Single white female.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
Mickey was so good at like at playing this character, like at playing Mickey, because she like when she first came in, she was so like peppy and excited and happy to be there and like, ah, true. And then like slowly she just got more and more creepy. And at first it's like, oh, she's just a bit, you know, a bit clingy. And then it's like, she's really being creepy now. And then bang, when she turns, she's just like, oh, fuck, you're a fucking psycho. Like, she did this great promo. I don't know if they showed it in the video or not, but she did this great promo. Like, it was, like, in her Mickey James lair. She was, like, in, like, a dark room with candles and, like, Trish posters on the wall. And she, scratched the eyes out of them and shit.
Oh, Jesus. They did not show that one.
And, oh, God, I gotta find it. And she just did this, like, crazy promo. And I think it was where they got the sound bites from about how we're, like, now I'm obsessed with your destruction, Trish. And just the whole, like, just, and it's so crazy. Like, it's just, she was so great in this angle. And it's like, and that's what, like, that's like, along with the fact that it was the Chicago WrestleMania crowd and it was a, like, funny, smart crowd, but, like, that's what turned the crowd towards Mickey, like, in the first place. Like, along with the fact that we're all living through her, she gets to stalk Trish. But, like, Mickey was so great and just so interesting at it. It's like you just wanted to root for her, you know what I mean? And so, like, she really, like, won crowds over with what she was doing, which is amazing.
It really stood out to me. I had to laugh because JR at one point in the match, good old Jim Ross, but the crowd was cheering for Mickey, and he made some comment that was like, oh, a lot of people in this crowd seem to be able to relate to Mickey. And I'm like, well, that's a weird thing to say. It says a lot about the nature of your fans more than it does.
Yeah.
Like, ugh. You can identify with the creepy stalker.
Yeah, okay. We'd all like to sexually assault Trish, wouldn't we? Like, you know, deep down, apparently.
Apparently so.
Like, and at one point, he's like, I think a lot of these people in the crowd got a hall pass from the home, like, to come watch this match. He, like, is, like, calling them crazy. Like, JR in this match is so amazing. He's like, I think he set a record for trying to find as many synonyms for crazy in one match as possible, because he was just like trying in so many ways to just, and the context for JR, if you don't know, if people don't know,
I can't wait.
This was the first WrestleMania 22 was the first show he had called since October of 2005 when he got fired on Raw. Then they did the JR's colon surgery. I don't know if you remember that stupid skit.
Yeah.
And embarrassed him, and he was gone. Joey Styles was commentating on Raw since then, and then they got to WrestleMania, and then they replaced Styles and Coach with JR and King again. Jeez. They had Styles call the ECW match on the show, and that was it. So JR is coming into this having not called any of this Mickey stuff before. He's just walking in. Like,
just walking in blind,
and
okay.
Seeing what's happening, and he's like, well, I guess she's crazy, I'll go with that.
That's
and,
great.
And the other thing about it is the crowd. And, like, it's interesting. Like, it to us now, it doesn't seem that remarkable, but at the time, WrestleMania 22, that was the first real, like, totally smart, like, we're cheering for the heels, cheering for who we want crowd. Like, it was a... Mm-hmm. It was a big thing at the time, like, because since the previous summer, John Cena was getting booed and people were cheering for Cena's opponents over that. But it was just Cena sort of thing. Like, it didn't extend to other baby faces or other popular heels. Like, they weren't cheering for other heels in the sense. It was just against Cena. Like, Batista didn't get the same backlash. Trish certainly never got the same backlash until now. Like, it was just, and then at WrestleMania, it was like, it was the last WrestleMania they did in an arena. So there were only, you know, 25,000 people there, I think, and it was like the hardcore of hardcore, and it was in Chicago, you know, big smart, and so,
yeah.
And it was the first time it all came together, and they just went full smark, and so they obviously booed the shit out of Cena, they cheered Triple H, they booed Rey, who was the big baby face, like, winning the world title on this show as well, they booed Rey and cheered for Angle instead.
Ugh.
They, you know, and... I think they cheered for Edge a lot, I think, in their match. Anyway, there was some other match where they, like, went rogue and cheered for the heel and stuff. And then, yeah, and so you get to this match, and everyone's already, like, on board with Mickey, and so they just went full, like, they wanted her to win the title, was the thing, really. Like, they just wanted her to win. And so Trish copped, like, you know, like, it's not like they wanted to boo Trish, they just didn't care about Trish, they wanted Mickey to win, you know. And so, and you have JR, who's walking in, like, blind, you know, having not worked for 6 months, and trying to, like... And they've never encountered this kind of backlash before from the whole crowd of a show. And so they're just trying to figure it out. So they go, like, oh, this crowd's very rebellious. This crowd's, you know. And then they get to them. JR, during this match, JR says this is a very rebellious, defiant crowd. And then they get to the main event, and they're all cheering for Hunter over Cena. And JR's like, this is a very traditional wrestling crowd. They're going for a traditional wrestler, not John Cena, the brawler. Like, it's like, okay. They're just trying to find ways to, like, you know, justify the crowd. Like, if it was in Canada, they would just say nothing but Bizarro World the whole time. Like,
right.
But, yeah, so it was an interesting crowd as well.
Well, and it definitely helped. I mean, when you think of WWE Divas matches, you don't think of the crowd heat.
No.
Needless to say. It was not something that I was expecting to have the crowd that invested, especially at a WrestleMania. Like, you know, obviously from the video package, it was pretty hot angle that they had invested a lot of time in. But there's still, when you're walking into it blind like I was, there's still that expectation that it is WWE and it is a Divas match. Like, it's going to be like the concession stand match, like that you're not meant to actually watch. But they were really invested into it, into the match the whole way through.
They really were. And the whole angle too, like, and that's a credit to the angle and what they were doing, because people were into it, like, week to week as well. So it's nice, really, to have a Divas match with that kind of crowd heat, you know, like, I enjoy that. People are on my side for once.
And it opened the door, the angle and the match and everything, for the immortal Jim Ross line about Mickie James, that she makes a vindictive ex-wife, something that he knows a lot about, look like Oprah.
There were so many great JR. I love
any glimpse into JR's personal life.
Oh, yeah. Every now and then on commentary, he says some, like, you know, like, crazy ex-wife thing, and you're like, huh, like, something's going on there. Like, I loved it when Mickey came out and JR, like, immediately, the first thing he says is, like, King, I think she's too old for you. She's in her early 20s.
Yeah, well, I was thinking when you mentioned that it was that this was JR's first night back on commentary and that it had been Joey Styles, I was like, I'm not a Jim Ross fan. Like, I really don't, like, I'm at the point where I find him obnoxious. But I was like, fuck, Jim Ross is so much more preferable for a Divas match than Joey Styles. Like, that would just be a freaking nightmare. And then I'm like, but wait, Jerry Lawler's sitting right next. This is just, I don't really want any of these people commentating on these matches. Like, where's Dusty? Can we give Dusty a call? Like, can we get Dusty and Tony to talk about this?
Like, exactly. But, like,
what's Lance Russell doing? It'd be a lot more comfortable if we could hear from Lance Russell. King starts talking about Mark Chapman and John Lennon, you know? Just like, what are we talking about here?
It was like the rare sober point that he makes, and then he just starts in on, you know, like, look at these crazy bitches, you know, like, both of them. But yeah, like, I mean, like Joey and Styles and Coach call their first match, the first pay-per-view match, and to Joey Styles' credit, he does call, like, the title matches and shit, like, as actual matches. Like, he tries to treat them seriously.
Oh, that's, like, good.
So, you know, it's not so bad. Like, they did well with the first match, but anyway, it's another match for another time.
Yeah.
So the match.
the match itself. I mean, I really liked how they got started because, you know, there's this intense angle. It's not just a title match. It's a real grudge match where one person is, you know, sexually assaulting somebody else, essentially.
Basically, and so, Trish comes out and just, like, wails on her.
Super intense to start. These crazy forearms, she hits a Thez press, and then, which JR lovingly calls a Louise Thez press. I thought that was pretty funny. Let's see. There's that spot where Mickey tries to fight back and she throws a kick and Trish grabs it, her leg, and pulls her forward.
And she does
putting
the split.
Mickey into the split, and then Trish just kicks her square in the fucking face. That was such a brutal spot. That was every little thing they did, like, they were laying in their shots.
Oh yeah, she was, like, beating the shit out of her, and I remember too. After that, there's a point to get outside. Mickey is sitting on the apron, like, facing out, and Trish comes in, like, and grabs the ropes and does this big, like, drop kick to the back of her head to send her to the floor, which is just, like, so fucking nuts for a Divas match, you know? She literally just, like, kicks her right in the back of the head. Like,
I wrote that spot. I wrote that down too as something I wanted to mention because it was fucking crazy.
It was brutal. Yeah, like, and it's not, like you said, it's not things that you think about for a Divas match. They were going all out, and Trish was just, like, just laying it in. It's not something you really think about, but Trish, like, she has really good, like, forearms. I guess they are. She usually uses the forearms instead of punching. But she, like, they're really tight.
Well, it's funny that you should mention that, because when we were planning the show, I mentioned to you, like, you know, I had actually, like, you know, we hadn't done a show in a while, and I'd actually, like, I, for the first time in my life, I was like, I kind of want to watch a Trish Stratus match. I no, like, I don't know where this came from. I don't have any idea why.
And probably the, my the, fault.
I mean, it's definitely your fault. It's 100% your fault. And so you know, I haven't watched a Trish match in probably 15 years, something like that. And honestly, my only memory of, like, Trish Stratus wrestling is her throwing crazy forearms at people. It's just her waylaying people with those forearms. So that was, like, my one memory of, like, Trish Stratus the wrestler. And then I watched this match and she's just killing Mickie James with forearms. And I was like, oh, I was right. Really, like, Masala level some of these forearms in this match.
She's killing, and Mickie sells them really well too.
Yeah, really, really
well. I noticed
well.
When they work, she just, yeah, she's great with the selling of the shots.
And it's, you know, it's a major feud for a Divas match, but it is a Divas match, so you know they're going to be short on time. And so you know, with the video package, with the entrances, I think they have like 15 total minutes of time out there, and yeah. So they kind of, you know, and they want to tell a story, so they do kind of move away from Trish's you know, opening flurry on offense, but it's so intense, and it's, and like, they get so much in terms of stiff shots that fit right in with the storyline, that, like, when they're transitioning on the outside to Mickey going on offense after Trish goes for that kick and she hits the ring post, you're like, you know, it doesn't feel too short. It doesn't feel like it feels just long enough.
You know,
just like every little thing they do, like, they're able to, they have a limited amount of time, but they're able to really work a full story. And I really like that just opening set by Trish where she's just trying to just kill her from the start.
Oh yeah. Yeah. And this, and it's a real, like, achievement of this match that they do that they're able to pack so much into the time and are able to, yeah, like, tell a full story, you know, like, go through ABC through the match, because, again, like, because of the time that they get, it's so rare for a Divas match to actually accomplish that. It's literally just because there's no time, you know. They have to, like, rush the start or rush the finish or rush the middle or, like, cut it out, you know, like, they just have to go straight to the finish, or they have to, like, cut out any kind of heat or any kind of middle section. They just have to, like, throw bombs for 3 minutes and go home, like, so it's just, it's, yeah, it's the great thing about this match is that they get, I think they get like 8 or 9 minutes for the match itself, and they are able, like, with the way that they work it, because Trish is so hot in the beginning, she only needs like a minute or so to, like, get over her, like, her, you know, her revenge and her, like, beating the shit out of her before they, you know, they get to the heat. And it, like you said, like, it doesn't feel too short. It feels like, you know, she beat the shit out of her for a bit, and then now, boom, he's...
And part of what makes it not feel so short is that they aren't just jumping back and forth to, like, you know, it's my turn on offense, now it's your turn on offense. Like, it's a really well laid out transition. On the outside, where Trish goes for the high kick, Mickie ducks, Trish hits the ring post, and then that opens up the knee.
Yeah.
But Mickie has been getting her ass kicked at the start, so she can't immediately jump on the knee. So, you know, it kind of builds where she's going after the knee, and then they both get back in the ring, and they're both feeling it. Mickie more so, but she's kind of coming back, and then Trish, you know, has a little bit more strength because she's been in control most of the match, but now she's got this injury. So they're back in and they're both throwing forearms at each other, where it's kind of like, and it's still the middle of the transition where it's leaning towards Mickie, but Trish is still kind of holding on.
Yeah.
And then Mickie hits that drop kick to the knee, takes Trish out, and that gives her the opening to completely go on offense and just start taking her apart like she's a horseman going after the knee.
Oh, yeah.
And so, and then, you know, so it's a great, like, full length kind of, like, you know, you get the full run of the transition, essentially. It's not just like, boom, here's the counter and now I'm on offense.
Yeah.
They're selling all the way through. And then in the heat section, you know, Trish gets some awesome little hope spots in.
Yeah. And then, like, sorry, you go.
I was gonna say like that head scissors takeover that she did. That kind of like Ray Jr. head scissor takeover that started from the ground. You know, like that was a really great like logical hope spot. So it was, I was so impressed with how much stuff they packed in logically.
Oh yeah.
Throughout this match.
Yeah, and that they really did. And yeah, like you said, like Trish's little hope spots were all sort of logical based on. What was like you said, like it was from the ground. Like Mickey had her legs like on her shoulders and then Trish was like, hey, if I spin around, I can get out of this, you know? So it worked. And then Mickey, every time Trish was dashed, it was because Mickey was like, I'm just going to go straight back to this knee.
Back to the knee, yep.
That's it. Like it was, I thought it was great when Trish went for her like head scissors in the corner when she does the handstand in the corner. And then Mickey just grabbed the leg and just, like, threw it down. And Trish just, like, crashed. And then Mickey ended up on the floor and she was just, like, laughing hysterically.
Trish was going for that handstand Rana because I wrote that down. So that was, like, the best spot in the match, I thought. That or, like, the split from the beginning that we talked about. Those are, like, my two favorite spots because they're super unique, super creative. Where Trish goes for that handstand, Mickey grabs her by the leg. She's kind of standing on, like, the second turnbuckle, but from the outside. And so she holds the leg and jumps down to the floor and rips Trish's leg down on the top rope as she's falling. It was so nasty and such a cool spot.
Yeah, and like you said, it was so, like, logical out of what they were doing. They didn't just make it up. It was just that's where Mickey caught her and just, like, bang. Just
right, exactly.
Killing her knee on the whatever's handy, you know, so it was so great. And and again, like, Mickey, she was so great during the heat playing her character because, like, she, like, got so much of the attention on her by, like, playing her character and just being fucking nuts. Because, like I said, like, she did that and then she ended up on the floor just, like, laughing hysterically. And then she, like, crawled back. That was when she crawled back into the ring and was, like, crawling towards Trish with just this, like, crazy fucking look on her face.
Incredible and then, facial expressions.
And then did, like, the like, humping pin as well, just to top it off. Like,
yeah.
And
just incredible facial expressions from her. I was really, really impressed because I don't think I've ever seen a Mickey James match before. I don't remember ever seeing one, and this was really, really awesome. Let's see.
And I mean, she also played with the crowd being on her side as well. Like she, because they could have like sort of tried to ignore it or tried to fix it, but they just went with it. And so Mickey, there was a point where Mickey was like twirling around in the ring, like drinking in like all of the cheers and everyone's just going nuts for her. And JR's sort of sitting there like, what the fuck is happening here? Like everyone's just going insane at the same time. And like, but it was so mad because she like looked so crazy. Even she was just like enjoying the fact that everyone was with her, like, you know, like she just, because that's how her character would react, you know, like she wouldn't turn around and say, shut up, fans, you know, like, I hate you. Like, she was just like, yeah, like, let's all be crazy, you know, like.
Yeah, like she was justified. All of her actions were justified.
Yeah, she's like, those, see?
With all these people cheering her. Yeah.
And I mean, and the other thing about the middle part of this match is that Trish fucking sold the shit out of that knee.
Yeah, she did. She really, really did.
Very good selling the knee. And like even like you said, even at points where she was like still up before like the heat really started, when they were like punching on, she was still like, or even like afterwards when she started coming back, like she was still showing that her leg was injured. Like every time when she'd like, when she was standing on it, she'd like hobble around and she'd do this, and then she was like, she sold it so well.
After the after that floating head scissors that she did, they kind of went from there to like the kind of Ray Jr.-ish sort of spot. They went sort of from there to kind of like the finishing stretch where Trish was sort of transitioning back to offense but still selling the whole time, and she's throwing these like desperate forearms and clotheslines, and then, you know, Mickey hits the ropes and she hits that that nasty spine buster.
And
so then they're just kind of in like the finishing stretch where you've got like the, you know, the short little opener where Trish is just destroying Mickey, and then you've got the leg work, and then it kind of That head scissors takeover sort of leads to the finishing stretch, and she's still selling the whole time.
I think the power bomb when Mickey went for her her rana from the corner.
I was just about to mention that. You're good. You're totally good.
Because that's Mickey's move. Like she wraps her legs around them in the corner and does the rana. And because of all the lesbian subtext of this stuff, when she does that, she gets her crotch in Trish's face. Everyone's just like, oh. And right. Then Trish just turns around and just bang, powerbomb.
Kills her with the powerbomb. And it's great because it works within the story that they're telling, both the subversive kind of sexual stuff, but also in terms of how is she able to execute a big move like a powerbomb when her knee's been getting worked over the whole time? Well, she doesn't actually lift Mickey up. Mickey's already up, and Trish just reverses it
and
plants her. Yeah, so it's not like, you know, she's blowing off the knee. Like, it's a very logical way to get to the point where Trish can hit a powerbomb.
Yeah, and I think it was the same with the spinebuster.
She sort
of didn't, pick her up and hold her up and bang. It was just Mickey, I think, however it happened, Mickey came at her, and Trish just sort of, she almost launches herself at Mickey and just, drives her down. So she's not putting weight on the legs. She's sort of airborne, and she just, uses the momentum to take her down instead of putting the weight on her leg. So, I think Trish did a really good job of still selling after she, after she made her comeback and started doing stuff.
Yeah.
When she did the Matrix, duck, which she always does, but, she, sort of flopped. She did the Matrix, and then she, sort of realized she was stuck because my knee hurts. I can't really, get out of it like I normally do. So she dropped to the ground instead.
She
couldn't
get back up that quickly.
It was like she was stuck because she couldn't move her knee to, to get back up. So she just, collapsed and went on with it. So, it was really good, attention to detail.
Which is great, which is important in a 9-minute long mat when you're getting 9 minutes to, have.
Yeah.
Was this the blow off of their feud? Probably not, because.
It wasn't the blow off, but it was. They, after that, they kept going and things. The angle got a bit weird. They had another match at Backlash, but that's when Trish got injured. She got injured at the start of that match. So they didn't really, and then that was it, basically. It sort of petered out after that. So this was the high point kind of thing.
Yeah, and it being WrestleMania, most people are going to be watching all year. This is going to be your most remembered match of the feud, most likely, especially when you're an undercard feud like this is. This is their biggest stage, and so I thought they did a really great job of maximizing the time that they had.
Oh yeah. Everything counted. Everything mattered in this match.
Yeah, exactly.
And then.
Especially.
The next moment of the match. when Trish goes for the Stratisfaction, her finish, and Mickey just does. And I love the, I don't want to say it like this, but, I love the way Mickey grabs her pussy, because that's what happened. But, she doesn't just do it, it's like a wrestling move. She lifts her arm right up and then brings it down and,
she's like Ricky Steamboat going for
the cheap seats.
She's going for a deep arm drag takeover.
And then she does that, and it's just oh, again, something they could never get away with.
Never mind. I won't even go there.
Maybe 2017, but you know.
Certain people. Yeah.
She does that, and then does the licking thing with her fingers, and it's just
The licking thing with her fingers, and as the crowd goes fucking crazy, as JR and that had to be the biggest pop in a Divas match in history up to that point, and probably up until the current day and age.
Pretty much, yeah. Like
that pop was enormous, and you know, you've got J.R. King freaking out, which is always delightful. And then, you know, Mickey does the licking thing, and then she turns around and gets the biggest forearm in the history of the world.
Yeah, like the biggest knockout punch of all time. Like she, like just the way Mickey sold that, like when she just like went out from under her legs and just like died, like it was so good. But yeah, Trish just, and this is the thing, like we said about this is the biggest, you know, stage that they had. That was the biggest moment in this entire angle, like all 6 months of it. Because like everything was leading up to this moment, basically, or like the, you know, tension, and then like the sexual harassment and literal, you know, like basically sexual assault at this point, and she's grabbing right. in the middle of a match, and she does that, and you know, and licks the thing, and then turns around and Trish just punches her fucking lights out and looks down at her like so disgusted, like
yeah.
to look on Trish's face, like if you ever touch my no-no place again, I will fucking end you. She just, and if I have one possible complaint about this match, which I don't, but like,
didn't end there.
Well, it's that they didn't let that sink in enough.
Yeah.
Like, again, it's a time thing because they sort of had to go home at this point, but like, if they had just let it sink in a bit for like Trish to stare her down a bit more and
yeah.
then like, and then have Trish, see, like, Trish then should have like gone for the kick and then missed and then they could have done the finish. But like,
right.
like Trish was staring at her like that, and that needed to sink in. But then half a second later, Trish is getting like, and the thing is that like people sort of miss the next point in the match, but it's so good in its own merits because like Mickey from the ground, when Trish is coming at her, looking at her like that, Mickey from the ground kicks Trish's bad knee.
Yep.
And she
takes her down.
And then Trish falls down and into Mickey's knee and knocks herself out.
Yeah,
and
which again, is
and she goes,
such a cool spot. And
it's
the,
such a cool, I, yeah, and it,
the
and it goes straight
don't
back
even
to
catch
the
it.
No, nobody does. Like, even people who talk about the match kind of miss that, I think. Like, and I think because it happened so quickly.
Yeah, and like, honestly, like, I completely forgot about, like, the first time I watched it, I saw her kick her, but I didn't see the face go into the knee. I thought I did. But I was like, no, it was just the camera angle, and the announcers didn't mention it, and it's WWE, so if it really happened, they would be, you know, they would be hitting it hard, and like it would be unmistakable. And then I saw it the second time I watched the match, and I was like, that was fucking awesome.
Yeah, it's just like, it's such a great spot. I just wish it had happened like 20 seconds later, you know, like it just,
yeah.
But it's such a great spot, and it was such a great way for Mickey to go back to the knee when she was desperate, and then get back.
But also kind of daze her, and kind of set
yeah.
her up for
well,
that.
Well, and again, like, and a way for Mickey from her back to, like, get to a point where she can finish her off.
Right.
Because, like, that's, like, the next thing that happens is that, well, and the next thing that happens is that Mickey tries to do the stratisfaction,
bulldog.
The bulldog.
Yeah, the stratisfaction,
and they
yeah.
fuck it up. Like,
yeah.
I've seen this match so many times now that I've now justified this spot in my head because, I mean, like, they botched it, but...
Oh, okay, go ahead.
But in my head, I justify it by saying, like, Trish's knee was injured. And, like,
yeah.
the way they do the move is that Trish's opponent, like, when Trish does it, I mean, like, Trish's opponent has to, like, hold her up for her
one.
To, like...
Yeah.
For her to like flick around and do it, and so I have this thing in my head where like if it was Trish doing it and Mickey's knee was injured, she wouldn't try and do that because she'd know she couldn't hold her up. But because Mickey's trying someone else's move, not her own move,
she doesn't understand
that.
The physics of it.
Yeah, so she
yeah.
tries
oh,
to
yeah.
have her weight bear and it doesn't work. And then, you know, because of the injured knee, I'm saying. Like, I mean,
right.
not, like, in reality, it was a botch, but, like, I've justified it in my head with that.
No, that...
It kind of fits.
yeah, no, that makes total sense and like, it's sort of kayfabe
yeah.
how the announcers...
Yeah, kayfabing the botch, yeah.
Yeah, like, how the announcers could have covered it if they were paying attention.
Yeah, if they wanted to, yeah, like...
yeah. So then
in the end, she just, like, uses Trish's other finish, which is the kick.
Yeah.
Because, like, you know, like, the yeah, and so the point of the finish was that Mickey used her own move to pin her as well. Like, that was, you know.
And I'll give it to the crowd for getting right back in for the finish. Like, definitely when they blew this, when they blew the bulldog, when they botched that spot, there was the audible groan.
Yeah.
And just kind of like, oh, that sucked. And they had been brought to such a fever pitch at that point, because the match was so fucking good.
Oh, yeah.
Up to that point, that it was just, there's this botch, and it was almost like a reminder, like, oh, yeah, they aren't good.
You know? Like, yeah, it's the last thing the women need when they're like,
yeah, exactly. It's trying, like, oh,
they're almost convincing you.
Exactly. You know, like, oh, like, we forgot.
She
went for the kick, and then they had a big pop for the finish. So that was great. They were back into it for the finish. So that was good. But that's like the only complaint I would have with the match is that they did have that botched spot, and I hate to just say like, oh, you know.
Yeah, but yeah, like, I mean, yeah, like, I mean, I'm not denying, like, you know, it was a pretty big botch at the finish. So
yeah, and especially because it led directly to the finish. You know, it's not like that our last podcast where there was a big botch in the match and they kind of kept going.
Yeah.
You know, whereas this one, it led directly to the finish. However, I thought that was really good kayfabe justification for why that happened. I thought that was excellent.
Well, thank you.
Yeah. It makes perfect sense, because, like, you're using them to, you know, hold you up.
And
yeah.
Just, like, because, I mean, like, it's a bit meta, but, like, with that move in particular, with that move, like, it's so obvious that they're lifting her up, you know what I mean? Like, it's just,
yeah.
Visually, it's very sort of, you know, so, like, you can sort of see that, like, yeah, well, that's why it wouldn't work, because, you know, she couldn't hold her up, so, you know, but...
Exactly.
Yeah, that's just me, like, trying to justify it, but, like,
I can get on board with that. I can get on board with that. I support that.
Thank you.
That's good. But, yeah, so, surprisingly... great match. I'm not gonna lie, like, the whole time I was really, really impressed. They hit every single little thing. When I watched it the second time, I thought surely this wasn't as good as it was when I watched it the first time, and the second time sure shit was. It's a great match. It's not the fourth best match ever. But it's better than Kenny Omega versus Okada, that's for sure.
That's for sure.
But
something,
I mean,
we
that's,
can all agree on.
that's really low hanging fruit, though. That's, yeah. You know. Excellent match. Anybody that, you know, visits PWO or listens to these podcasts, you know, visits Place to Be Nation, you really should check this match out. I mean, it's 9 minutes long. It's on the network. It's 15 minutes with the opening video package, the intros, and the post match. Like,
yeah.
Excellent pick. Yeah,
it's a good use of your time.
Yeah, it's a really good use of your time. Anybody that's about to watch a Kevin Owens match, stop everything and watch this Trish Stratus match instead, because it's going to be way better.
Exactly. Like, Marty, who's from the Tag Teams Are Back podcast, he watched this match a few weeks ago and reviewed it, and then to me, he asked me privately, like, is this the best, like, Divas match era ever? Because I think it is, and, like, could there possibly be anything better than this, like, to me? And I was like, yeah, I'm pretty sure it is the best Divas match ever. And yeah, like I said, it's still my favorite women's match ever. Like, I mean, like, my favorite women's match can change every now and then, because it's like a certain Trish match or a certain, basically, right. It's a certain Trish match. But, like, at the moment, I think this is the best one.
And this is Trish's longest match, right?
No, in fact, it is Trish's third longest match.
Oh, her third longest match. Okay.
Yeah, I think her retirement match was her longest match. And
it's like
also, I've been 15
minutes or something, 12
yeah,
minutes.
No, it's like 11 and a half.
11
so
and a half,
she
yeah.
never went 12 minutes in her whole career. So
yeah, which is, but I mean, she did such a great job in a 9 minute match that, like, I don't need all of the matches that I watch to be 30 fucking minutes long. You know, like, there's certainly a place for somebody who can do great 9 minute matches, and this was a great 9 minute match.
Yeah. Oh yeah, exactly. Like, you just, yeah. And I also, because I've I'm sort of starting to work on my own kind of Divas project, and so at the moment I'm going through the results, like going through Divas matches, trying to like make a catalogue. And I'm pretty sure that this is also Mickie James's third longest WWE match of her career, like the first career. I don't know about now, because right. The Asuka match was probably longer than like every match she's ever had.
Right.
Yeah, so it's, and again, so, and it just shows the amount of time these women get to do anything with. And so, but here, they actually got, relatively speaking, a lot of time, nine whole minutes,
yeah.
And they did so much with it that, like, you know, it felt like a full, complete, you know, 15-minute match, you know, like when you...
No, it absolutely did. Like, you didn't leave that match thinking like, oh, they could have done more or they should have done less. You know, it was, I think they really nailed it.
Yeah, it doesn't feel too short. It doesn't feel like a sprint either. Like, it doesn't feel like they just did whatever they could in the time. Like, they just actually just worked a full, you know, complete story of a match. Like, so yeah. Right. And like I said, it's very rare that they get to do that. So like, it's quite an achievement as a match, I think.
Yeah, and now I definitely see kind of where you're coming from when you look at the women's revolution, and then you kind of go back and look at a match like this, and it's like, well, fuck, what could Trish have done if she had been treated seriously for her whole career and gotten real opportunities?
This is what I'm saying. Like,
that was a really good performance from her.
Yeah, and like, and not just her, but Mickey, but everyone Mickey else too, in this yeah. time. Like, there's so much talent that just gets wasted with what they get to do, and it just, like, imagine if Trish got, like, you know, a 30-minute main event on a pay-per-view, you know what I mean? Like, it just,
yeah.
It boggles my mind what these girls all could have done if they had more than 3 minutes to work every week. It just frustrates me so much. And again, like, I'm going through results at the moment, and I'm noting down how, like, the times of these matches, of the women's mm-hmm. matches, and the amount of time that they get on a weekly basis. We're talking, like, 90-second matches, matches.
Are you just doing Raws and SmackDowns?
Yeah, well, whatever's on TV, like Raw, SmackDown, yeah. pay-per-view. Like, on pay-per-view, yeah. they might get, like, 4 minutes.
Right.
Like, I'm cataloging, I'm making a list of all the Divas matches ever that were longer than 4 minutes long, and it is not a long list. It really yeah. isn't. Like, it's just astounding. So yeah,
I assume they got to work a little bit longer on house shows though, so I mean, that's
yeah, but house shows are different. Like, I mean, the ones yeah. that we can see on TV, I mean, like,
yeah, the ones that count, the ones that matter,
yeah. Because I mean, you know, the guys get longer on house shows too, but they also get, you know, to work a 15-minute match on TV, like...
Exactly, yeah. This that we're going on and on about how great it is that they got 9 minutes, like, that's the third yeah. match on Raw gets 9 minutes.
Exactly, like, it's, you know...
Yeah.
Anyway, but yeah, so this is a definitely a shining light of this era.
Yeah, excellent match. Everybody should really go out and watch this. Like, you'll be very pleasantly surprised at how good of a job they did.
Indeed, I think so.
Indeed. All right, so, French Catch?
French Catch. Let's do it.
Let's do it.
I can't remember how you pronounce them as.
yeah, I was going to say again for the folks listening, it's Gilbert Cheska versus Billy Cantanzaro. Wait, Catanzaro?
Catanzaro.
I'm sorry.
Gilbert Cesca contre
Gilbert Cesca.
Billy Catanzaro. Yeah.
Perfect.
I studied French at school, so which means that I'm still incapable of speaking French, but I can pronounce things with a French accent.
There you go. And I'm from the American South, and so I don't think I'm allowed to say Gilbert, even though I am of French heritage.
yeah, it's...
But yeah, so this is the first thing I wrote down in my little notes for this match is just expectation shattering. Because, like... there's that the thread on PWO about French Catch that's really interesting, and when this popped up, this got linked on it, and some people said it was really, really amazing, but it's one of those things where you kind of, you know, you judge a book by its cover. You look at a match and you see it's 30 minutes long. It's from the 60s. It's probably going to be pretty slow. It's probably going to be all worked on the mat, just exchanging
lots of
holds.
And...
You know, yeah, lots of headlocks and arm locks and, you know, where they're laying in it for 30 seconds before moving on to the next thing. Not to say that that's a bad style, not to say that, you know, whatever.
Yeah, you can enjoy that, but it's just, yeah, that's just the expectation.
That's the expectation, and just sometimes you don't want to watch that. And
I know I have no interest in watching that, so I'll just I'll say straight out.
And so I didn't, you know, I didn't watch this for a long time, and then I recently ended up watching it for a little project that I'm doing. I'm trying to watch all of, like, I'm trying to figure out my 5-star and 4¾-star matches for that thread, and so I'm trying to watch, like, a lot of things that are, like, super highly pimped, and this particular match was mentioned in that thread a few times, and so I was just like, all right, let's watch it, and oh my god, it's really, really amazing. So you kind of feel like you're in for something a little different from the very first lockup, because it's not only is it like really, really fast, like a World of Sport kind of like, oh shit, all of a sudden they're locked up sort of lockup, but it also combines this feel of like precision and a violent lack of control at the same time. And that kind of happens throughout the whole match, where everything seems like recklessly violent, and yet it's all really precise. Every single way, every time they lock up, every like knuckle lock that they do, it's just like, how the fuck are you not breaking each other's hands or shoulders?
Yeah, like it's, yeah, it has that feel of it. Yeah, like you said, where it's like, it's really smooth, like mat work, you know, and they're like going in and out of holds so quickly and like doing, but it's also, like you said, it's also really violent at the same time. Like they're not just dancing around, you know, they're not just going through the motions of like going in and out. Like just, they are like really ripping into these holds.
It's like, because I've been watching your World of Sports stuff lately, actually, for this project, or for the little 5-star thing. Yeah, and like, you know, you'll see something like Johnny Saint work an arm lock, and it's so quick and it's so fast, and if you blink, you miss it. And these guys have that too.
Yeah.
But in addition to it, there's like a William Regal raking the elbow across your face he's moving at this Johnny Saint speed, and it's just like, how are they not killing each other?
Yeah, it's just, yeah, it's both things at once. Yeah, like, I mean, it's just, because, yeah, there's a point where, like, he's working the knee, and he's literally just, like, grinding his knuckles into the guy's kneecap. It's like, Jesus Christ, like, who does that? Like, you don't see that, and it's just so brutal. But at the same time, it's still, you know, working holds, and then they, like, move so smoothly into something else, and it's just crazy. It's just, yeah, my first note about this match I wrote down is, holy shit.
Yeah, exactly. I've got a lot of capital letters in my notes, and at some point I just stopped taking them. It was like the third time I'd watched the match, and I'm like, I can't even write about this. I just want to fucking watch it.
Yeah,
like I can't even think about this in terms like so. Like one of the things that I wrote, like, you know, they have that first lockup that I talk about, and it's like, so they kind of settle down, and you kind of think that you've got a handle about what this is going to all be about. You know, it's the 60s, so you're going to expect mat work, and they kind of get into the mat work, and you know that it's European, you know that it's French, and based on what we know about British wrestling, being the mat work being a little kind of quirky and weird and wonky, you can kind of infer that, well, the French mat work is probably going to be a little bit weird and kind of quirky.
Yeah.
And so you're watching it, and it's like, yeah, that's sort of what's happening. Like they do this like cravat trading that's like really cool, where they're like flipping over each other. And then all of a sudden, one of these guys does a Hurricane Rana out of nowhere in 1960. And it's like, And it's 2 minutes into the match, and you're like, wait a minute, did this guy just do a Hurricane Rana?
Yeah,
like,
what the fuck? Yeah.
Where the fuck did this come from? And, like, before you can kind of, like, before you realize, like, what's happening, they're working this, like, Eddie Guerrero, Dean Malenko, like, parody, like, sunset flip roll-up-y.
Yeah, roll-up, yeah, roll-up sequence.
Section, and it's
like
100 times
years before the Eddie being...
And it's like 100 times cooler, and it's like,
and
what?
Faster, and like, and faster. And they're so creative, like the way they, like, the positions they end up in, it's just so crazy. It's just like, and then you look at like an Eddie and Dean roll up sequence, and you're like, how lame and old and boring is that in comparison? It's like, holy shit.
It's 30 years in the future.
Yeah.
And then just when you start to like kind of wrap your head around that, one of these guys, and I'm going to keep saying that, one of these guys,
because I'm not going to lie,
I don't know which one is which. There's one guy with like a Rand Paul sort of, weirdo haircut, and then there's the other guy. I don't know which is which, but they're both amazing. They're like the same size, black trunks, stocky, like muscular, short builds, but they're both amazing. So one dude... Once you're coming down from this Dean Malenko, Eddie Guerrero roll-up parody segment, and then the next thing you see, you're wrapping your mind around that, and then there's a violent monkey flip.
Oh, my God, yeah.
That looks totally brutal, and then all of a sudden the referee's counting to 10 while the guy's down on the ground, and you're like, wait a minute, do they do shoot-style knockouts in fucking French Catch,
yeah,
too?
Yeah, and they're doing shoot-style knockout counts over a monkey flip.
And then this is literally, this is all within the first, like, 5 minutes of the match.
Yeah.
So then, when you're coming to terms that they're doing shoot-style, these shoot-style, like, knockdowns for near falls, which is so cool, and it's, like, one of my favorite things of shoot-style, that they do the near fall 10 counts for knockdowns and for suplexes. I just love it. Once you're coming to terms with that, one of these guys does a Ray Jr. float over, where he, like, floats over the guy's shoulders like he would be doing an arm drag. But instead, he lands on his feet, and he throws a forearm harder than any Misawa forearm you've ever seen. And it's like, okay, holy fucking shit. And then you blink, and then one guy's doing a gonzo bomb.
And the fucking gonzo bomb.
What the fuck?
Oh, I know. It's just, it's so mental. Like you said, like, this is the first 10 minutes of the match.
Like, this is all in the first, like, 10 minutes, and you have no idea what you're watching, who these people are, how this could have possibly happened.
Oh.
And it's the 1960s, and it's like, you're getting stuff from ECW in 95, yeah. You're getting all Japan late 90s spots, you're getting Ray Jr.
shoot style
knocked it. This is insane.
And you're getting like modern, like indie riffic spots, because at some point they do a fucking Canadian Destroyer, I swear to God.
They do. It's crazy. And then, like, you know, finally you get a chance to catch your breath, and I wrote down, they take it to the, you get to catch your breath, and they take it to the mat, and before you know it, one of these motherfuckers is putting the other one in the William Regalist, Masafuchiist toe lock you've ever seen.
Yeah.
But fortunately, the other guy is able to kick the other dude directly in the face to get out of it.
Yeah.
And so you're okay again. And I'm just like, it's unbelievable. The first time I watched this match, I could not get over what I was seeing, because I'd never seen it. It just went so far against what I was expecting to watch, while still kind of staying true and like to what I was expecting and like the weird quirky mat work.
But just times a thousand. Like, because like you said, it seems like everyone who watches this match is like, goes online and is like, holy shit, this is a crazy match, this is the best match ever, you have to watch it. And everyone who like ends up watching it has this reaction, and so you read these reactions and you're like, I should watch this match, but like I said, like, I never got around to watching it either.
Mm-hmm.
And so you sort of think like, it can't possibly be that good, you know what I mean? Like, it's just, you know. And then I've watched it and I was like, holy shit, they were fucking right, they were so right. Because you're not ready for how crazy this is.
It's so hard to judge a match like this because we have no idea of the context. You know, we don't know anything about these wrestlers. You know,
is like, this an average 3-star French catch match?
Exactly. We don't know what French catch looks like on a general, just average basis. So all we can do is compare it to, you know, what we know about wrestling. And when there's so many things that... when you just see this, it's just like, yeah, that's the best fucking match I've ever seen. Like, when you think about it in terms of, like, the 1960s and then all of the things that they're doing, it's the most mind-blowing shit you've ever seen. Because, like we said, they're doing sequences that we wouldn't see for 30 more years. They're doing Gonzo Bombs and Hurricane Ranas. I don't think Hurricane Ramirez was even wrestling at the... Like, why would he... Did we need to rewrite everything? Like, this is really amazing.
Like, yeah, it's, if you didn't know any better, you would think this is like the birth of like 100 different wrestling styles. Like, actually has nothing to do with anything else.
It doesn't have it.
That was invented 20 years later. Like,
there's no way Dean Malenko and Eddie Guerrero watched this match and took spots from it. There's no way Misawa saw this and was like, oh, what if instead we could do it this way, but we could do pretty much that ridiculous move right there. Not only like they did a traditional powerbomb that was a crazy, crazy looking powerbomb. You know, it was earth shattering, mind blowing. Like, I have no idea how this match exists.
Exactly.
Like...
I have no idea either. It's just, it's insane. And like, oh, you know what else? Those headbutts they were throwing at each other.
Headbutts, yeah.
Because they would launch themselves off. Like one of them, I think it was maybe the first one, the first big one they threw. It's the biggest headbutt I've ever seen, because he like launches himself across the ring at him, like head first, and the other guy like is launched like airborne from this fucking headbutt. I'm like, and then at the end,
the shoulder blocks.
Yeah, when he starts doing like the pounce, like the Monty Brown pounce from TNA, like just running and just pouncing him like multiple times, and then the other guy finally counters by launching himself back at him with a headbutt as he's running at him.
It's just completely insane. This is what I have this in order in my notes. Back to the toe lock and my legs hurt. Seriously, the hardest European uppercuts in history. Then all of a sudden you get a ridiculous jumping headbutt. Then a straight-up nasty powerbomb, and finally you're just overcome. What the fuck am I watching?
Yeah. That's the... When they hit that powerbomb...
And then I stopped taking notes.
Yeah.
After that, I gave up. I'm like, I'm not doing this anymore. I'm just watching this.
Because they hit the powerbomb, and then, like, there's a pin, and the guy, like, kicks out of the pin and somehow ends up on top. Like, he kicks out by, like, basically, like, defying gravity and just, like, ascending into the air, flip, like over him. And then they flip over and do a Canadian Destroyer, and there's another pin, and, like...
it was like a kick out, they did the powerbomb, and then he kicked out. But in kicking out, he almost did, like, a seated Hurricane Rana, which then the other guy reversed into, like, a seated sunset flip. And it's just like, are they doing this?
Yeah, it's literally like a Canadian Destroyer or, like, a Code Red or something, like, 40 years before fucking Petey Williams. Like, it was insane. And it just, there was a great moment where, like, one guy goes for a big, big launching headbutt, and the other guy, like, goes to the ground and just stands straight back up and just headbutts him back. It's just like he literally like no-sold like the biggest headbutt of all time. Just got straight back up and did it back to him.
So after I watched this for the first few times, I let me see if I can find the After I watched this for the first few times, I went back into the thread on French Catch just to see what people like were saying about it, because I saw that it was like a 5-star match and that on somebody's list, and I knew that French Catch thread existed, and so I wanted to go back just to see, like, do other people, surely they think this is like the best match ever, and it was all like, you know, people just raving all over it, talking about how great it is, and then Matt D, our buddy Matt, comes in and he just writes, "This is the best ROH match I've ever seen."
yeah.
So like we're sitting here, anybody that's listening, like we're talking about like, you know, a lot of mat work and a lot of stiff strikes and you know, shoot style knockdowns and, you know, painful looking submissions and funky mat work. But then if that's not really your thing, it does have like the pacing of an ROH match, because they're working so quickly. They're doing so many things. Like, if you're a fan, like, I hate things like, oh, you know, if you don't like this match, you just don't like wrestling. You know, that's such a cliche, but I just feel like this match has something for every single fan of every wrestling style. There's something you can find in this match that will relate to like your home preferred style, and unless you're like a Dory Funk Jr. fan,
you like boring shit.
But even then, they've got the European uppercuts that are better than any that, you know, like,
yeah, I agree completely, because there are just so many styles at play in this match. Like you said, like there's like World of Sport kind of mat work and kind of pacing as well, like with the way they go through holds and then do kind of a big spot and then go back to holds, and you know, and but also like it's just like Japanese wrestling with the crazy stiff forearms and the Gonzo bomb, and you know,
there's like a New Japan like trade-offs, like you know the everybody hates the spot.
Yeah, there's
the forearm exchange, and it's awesome.
There is,
you know,
they end up on their knees, like,
and it's every bit as stiff as that Goto Shibata match that everybody was freaking out about. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Oh, totally. And it just, and then there's like big crazy like bombs, like from modern indie matches when they're like flipping each other over and doing Canadian destroyers and sliced bread. Like the finish was a fucking sliced bread number two. Like he like flips him over and does like the like Brian Kendrick's finish.
Okay, I was like, I have no idea. Yes.
Some people probably know what it is. Like Brian Kendrick's finish where he flips him over. That's basically what the fucking finish was. Like,
yeah.
So they're doing so many like indie-rific moves. They do a surfboard at one point too.
They do a surfboard. It's just it's
you know.
I joked before we went on the air that like you and you kind of alluded to it too, that like, you know, 200 years from now when we're all dead and gone and the history of tape trading has died with us, people will look at this match and say, this started modern wrestling. Like, it all started from here.
Because it does literally look like it. If you did, like you said, if you didn't know better, you would look at this and say, well, this is where they got World of Sport from. This is where they got, like, Lucha mat rolling stuff from. This is where they got Puro, like head droppy stuff from. This is where they got forearm exchanges from. This is where they got, like, you know, all these big moves from, all these big bombs. It's just, it's everything.
And it really is.
It's crazy.
I was watching this last night again, and after I finished it, I was like, maybe I'm just like totally wrong, and maybe like I'm just coming at this from just a wrong perspective, a place of ignorance, because I'm not as familiar with like 50s and 60s wrestling as I would like to be. You know, I've seen a decent amount, but I was like, maybe I'm just wrong. Maybe I'm like watching the wrong wrestlers, whatever. So I like kind of poked around and like looked at some Luthes and like Vern Gagne stuff, just guys that were like known for working on the mat. And I'm like, maybe everybody was like this fast back then, and I just haven't watched it enough, so I don't have a good enough handle on it. No. These guys are just truly doing something different. And it really, like, you know, like we talked about, we don't know if this is just like an average 3-star French Catch match, because, you know, one thing that it's not a very hot crowd. I mean, it's, you know, they'll react to certain things, but it's quiet for long stretches. I don't know if that's because the work is falling flat or because that's just how crowds are. I suspect that that's just how the crowds were, because they were right there for everything that, like, you would think that you would have to respond to.
Yeah, the big stuff, yeah.
All the big stuff, they're there. So, and, you know, it's the 60s. I can see them just being, you know, more reserved and polite, respectful, whatever, in between spots. So it's really difficult. We really don't have a real way to judge it based on the crowd. But it's just, you know, just watching it and comparing it to everything else, it's just amazing.
Exactly. It compares so favorably to so many things that we are familiar with, you know. Yeah. So, like, it... Yeah, I just, I don't
know. Like, I'm at the point now where, like, I can't ever watch something like, I had always said that the Destroyer versus Giant Baba was, like, my favorite match from the 60s.
Yeah,
one of the best. You know, it would be, like, in my top three matches of all time, if we were to do a, you know, a top 100 or whatever. Not anymore.
Yeah, because I noticed you just posted in the Match of the Decade thread at PWO, and you said this was the best match of the 60s, and I agree, like, because I'm the same. I would have said Baba vs. Destroyer as well.
Easily, easily. That would have been, like, my second or third all time.
Unless there's a British match from the 60s I'm forgetting about, but I don't think there is.
Yeah.
This is, like, just so way above everything.
Well, and the thing, like, if you'd ask me, like, why is Baba Destroyer the best match from the 60s, I would have said, like, oh, it's, you know, it's the best mat work. You know, it's the unbelievable mat work. It's so great. It's so creative. It's so unique.
And even Baba vs. Destroyer seems ahead of its time in a way. Like,
exactly.
That's how it came off to me.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And yet,
not anymore.
It's like, you know, like, 100 years in the future, like, it's just
it's almost like no mat work can ever be good again unless it was this or, like, Volkan and Tamura, you know, like
they've ruined mat work for you.
They've completely ruined mat work. I don't know how I'm ever gonna watch Jack Briscoe again. But
someone
one thing
I've seen Cesco and Catanzaro, nothing compares to.
Nothing compares. And, well, what's interesting, and this was something that I was trying to get to earlier, and then I got sidetracked and I lost my point and I filibustered for a little bit while I tried to find it. But I never did, but I just found it. One thing that I found really interesting, you know, when we all think, reading the French Catch thread, it was either OJ Otani's jacket or Panther Wagner, who's awesome, knows a ton of stuff about European and Lucha Libre history. Really, really awesome dude. They were talking about this match and just French Catch in general. And apparently the perspective in these days amongst European wrestling fans was that the French were the best mat wrestlers. The Spanish were the second best mat wrestlers, and the British guys, the World of Sport guys that we know so well, were the third best mat wrestlers. That they were actually worse than their counterparts in France and Spain. And when you watch World of Sport from our, you know, Americanized perspective of what mat work looks like, it's totally fucking mind blowing.
The best shit ever.
It's the best shit ever. And then now when with this knowledge that in Europe, they were actually considered, like, the worst of the mat wrestlers.
Wow.
It's like, holy fuck. And, you know, and apparently also learning from that thread that it's very likely that most of this stuff exists. Most of, like, the French televised wrestling probably exists in a vault somewhere.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I remember reading about that. Yeah.
We just, you know, can't have
it. Never comes out. Yeah,
it just never comes out. And apparently one of his buddies, Panther Wagner, one of his buddies was, like, trying to figure out a way to get access to the footage. But just due to bureaucratic reasons, it's, like, not even an issue of, like, you know, they'll sell it to you, but it's crazy expensive. Like, the bureaucracy is to the point where it's just not possible. So there's a vault somewhere with a treasure trove of this stuff.
French Catch, Jesus.
And we gotta get there.
That's the new Holy Grail footage.
Yeah, that and, like, you know, EMLLs.
Well, apparently, where is all this Spanish fucking wrestling? Because, like, if
they're
better than British wrestling.
Exactly, I gotta see that shit, too. Are you kidding me? If these guys are better than, you know, apparently better as a whole than the British, you know, I don't want to say that they're all better than Jim Breaks or whatever, but
yeah,
just as a whole,
if
that's the perception, then I want to fucking see that shit.
Yeah.
And so it's interesting because, like, what if this is just an average 3-star French Catch match?
The old French fans are looking at us going, it's just Cesca versus Catanzaro. Like, it's not that great, you know?
Yeah, exactly. This is like a opening match. This is like Brad Armstrong.
Yeah, exactly. Wouldn't that be something?
Who knows? So it's a really fascinating match to watch for so many reasons.
Oh,
both just thinking about it from like a historical, like global perspective of like, what the fuck was French wrestling like back in the day? Is this just average? And then also just looking at this alongside everything else and just thinking that these guys are so much better than every other.
Exactly.
I can't even believe it. Like,
yeah, and it's such a great match. And the time flies. Like, it's like a half hour video, but it's a half hour match really, but just the time flies. You look up and it's like there's 5 minutes left.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's 32 minutes long, the video, and it's, you don't get any intro, and
yeah,
it goes
it's all
almost,
match.
Yeah, and the pinfall is almost right at the end of the video. So it's basically all match, and
worth your time. Like,
it's so worth your time, because when it's 30 minutes of just your mind getting fucking blown left and right by these people you've never seen or heard of, when they're, I mean, I just...
Time becomes irrelevant.
Time becomes irrelevant. When
time is a
when
construct.
When there's a 1960s Hurricane Rana within 2 minutes of the match, like, and if you're not hooked at that point, like, what the... Well, you're doing something wrong.
And there's also, as a postscript to this match, I was Googling Cesca. I was Googling both of them, but I found an interview that Cesca did, like, must have been like a few years ago, because he was in his 80s at this point and they were interviewing him, and the interviewer was straight out like, well, isn't wrestling fake? Like, weren't the matches fake? And Cesca was still like a carny, and he was like, nah, all my matches are real. I tried to win all my matches and it was just all like on the level. So he still to this day is keeping kayfabe and is like a total carny and like, nah, wrestling's real.
That's
like
awesome.
that fake WWE shit, like where they punch and kick, that's fake. But like the French wrestling, like the lutz, like that was real. Like, so he's still a fucking carny as well.
They hit each other so hard in this match that
he probably believes he was trying to.
Yeah, exactly. The CTE has convinced him that it was real. It was unbelievable. I mean, there's a spot where, you know, one guy's going for like a monkey flip or one guy's on the ground and the other guy goes to dive on him or something. And the other guy, the guy on the ground gets his legs up and he just stops in midair. He kind of just throws him up. But it's just, you know, it's a standard spot where like somebody's diving on you, you get your legs up and you stop him. But it just looks so brutal.
Like
he's completely off the ground to where, yeah, all that is stopping him is the boot right in his heart. Like,
yeah.
It's just every
they went right through him
thing.
Because he would do that, like, it was one of, I think it was Catanzaro who did that. He did it a few times. That was, like, his, like, go-to, like, defensive move when he would try and launch himself at him. Like, Cesca would try and launch at him, and he would just stick his legs up, and, like, they'd go right through him. Like, he just, like, impaled him on his legs.
Ugh.
Like, it was so brutal. Like, and there was also, like, towards the end, there was, I think it was when Cesca was doing those pounces, the running pounces.
Yeah.
And they, as a counter, they did this, like, slick, like, roll-up thing out of the counter, like, Cesca came running at him, and he, like, flipped him over and got, like, a pin out of it. like a pin, and it was just like, it was the fastest roll up I have ever seen in my fucking life. Like, I rewound it like 10 times to try and figure out like who was who, like who was doing what and where they ended up. Because I couldn't tell. It was so fast, I couldn't tell who ended up like pinning who, because like, and I knew who they were like coming in.
Yeah.
But then it was just like, it was a blur. It was literally a blur. It was that fast. And I'm like, what the fuck just happened? Like, it was so fast. What, like, and again, it's just, that's the kind of crazy shit they were doing.
There was a moment, there was a moment in the match where the very first time I watched it, where, and this is going to sound ridiculous, but it's totally true, where I actually checked the speed of the video to make sure that it hadn't somehow gotten sped up. And then I was like, okay, so it hasn't. Maybe just the film reel is sped up. And then I just looked at the ref, and he was moving around at normal human speed. And I realized that, no, this is just how fast these guys are moving. And then I was just, my mind was blown even more. Like, literally, like,
it does this, literally look like they're, like, sped up.
But, and I get that from World of Sport, too. Like, I really do. Like, there's moments where you're watching Johnny Saint, like, you know, they do a knuckle lock, and then he does some crazy spinning thing, and like, you can't believe how fast he got around. And so it's not something that's like, that I think is just unique to these two guys. But like I said earlier, the difference is that they're like dragging the William Regal forearm across each other's face while they're moving so quickly.
Yeah.
Just like, so it does stand out and make it even more impressive than that Johnny Smith, than like a Johnny Saint, where it's just kind of, you know, a quick whip, but they're not even really, you know, it's just, that's how quick he can spin in one spot while holding your hand.
Yeah.
Whereas this is how fast he can spin while hitting you with an elbow while he's turning. Like, it's just,
it's usually one or the other, where like, they're like really quick and showing off their speed, or they're like really brutal and like laying into each other. But this is like both of those things at once. Like,
pick the fastest mat worker you've ever seen, just in terms of like speed and agility.
Yeah.
And then like
a Tamura or someone like,
yeah, like a Tamura. And then like, combine that with like the grittiness of a William Regal, and that's this whole, or a Fit Finlay, and that's this whole match. That's like how they're working. So it's like, you could convince people that it was, that it was kind of real, because it did look like they were fucking killing each other.
I know, like I get it, like that he, you know, is trying to maintain this like, yeah, we were really, you know, because they was, yeah, it was very, very stiff.
Yeah, right. It's so stiff. And then the submissions themselves were, in addition to being like, you know, kind of quirky and kind of cool, just look fucking brutal. Like that toe lock that they were.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Where, you know, one guy had the toe lock, but he took his foot and was pressing into the back of the guy's knee, giving him more leverage on the toe lock. So fucking nasty. Just brutal. And that was like every submission was just like, the most painful version of that submission that you could do.
Exactly.
Ugh. Yeah.
Watch the match, people. Everybody, stop what you're doing and watch this match.
Seriously, I mean, it is like, it is unreal.
Can't say it enough.
Yeah, it's like a, you know, who knows if it's like a 3-star French match, but it's like a 100-star New Japan Pro Wrestling match based on the Kenny Omega scale.
Yeah, and it's a 100-star like British match. It's a 100-star Ring of Honor match. It's like in everything. It's a 100-star Lucha match, Lucha title match. Like,
yeah, you can't stress enough how impressive it is that they've got all of these styles, and then they like predate half.
Yeah, they're styles that haven't even been invented yet, and they're combining all of them into this match at once.
Like, I gotta figure out when Hurricane Ramirez debuted. I think it was in the 50s, but I like, if they're doing Hurricane Ranas before the guy that invented Hurricane Ranas started, then that would be really fun. Like, that would just be a real nice added twist to all of this.
Exactly. But, like, I wouldn't doubt it at this point.
Yeah, everybody, just stop everything and watch this fucking match. Like, you'll just die.
You're not ready.
No, even after like all of this,
still, after, like, yeah, you're still not ready.
I would listen to this and be like, I just don't believe them. like, there's no way this could possibly have happened. I just don't believe it. But no, it's real. This was a real thing. It's on YouTube, and we'll make sure to we'll add links. Obviously, Trish and Mickey is going to be on the network. Is the pussy grabbing spot on the network?
No, they edit out the pussy grabbing and they edit out the botch at the finish. So
oh, they did edit out
the botch. If you want the real experience, you're going to have to head to YouTube.
Yeah, head to YouTube. Definitely watch an older version because it is a key spot, and we'll definitely make sure that this Gilbert Chesca and Billy Catanzaro, whatever. I can't do it. Can't do his last name. Yeah.
We'll I like make saying sure that over and over.
I really like Gilbert Chesca. It's really fresh, like ordering a drink at a restaurant.
It sounds like a salad.
I'll take a Gilbert Chesca.
Yeah.
but yeah, we'll make sure to get those up. Yeah, both on the board and when we show up on the PETA Place to Be Nation website page, we'll make sure that those links are included so you can watch this. And oh, you've got to watch them, people.
Yeah, please, please do.
Yeah, and after all that we've talked about with this French catch match, do not forget to go and watch that Trish Stratus and Mickey James match, because it is really fucking awesome. And that's kind of the theme of today's episode, was just expectation shattering.
Yeah, it was in the end, wasn't it?
I never would have expected that match to be that good, just as I never would have expected that French catch match to even exist in the form it exists in.
Exactly, and I feel exactly the same about the French match. It's just, it's unbelievable. Literally unbelievable.
Literally, like, you won't, until you see it, like, this doesn't do it justice. As excited as we've been, and as, like, as much as we've spoiled it.
Yes. And as hyperbolic as we've been, we're still not doing it justice.
I feel like we haven't done it justice. I probably, like, I'm at, like, default mode with Sangre Chicana MS1 being my all-time best match. This honestly, like, might knock it off the top spot.
That's really cool.
And I've thought that about the Chicana match for years and years and years. So the only hesitation in saying that, like, this is the easily best match I've ever seen is just because I'm just holding on to it. Like, give me 10 years and we'll see how I feel about it. But, yeah. Like, this feels like the one that could do it.
Wow. There you go. Yeah. The highest praise of all, I feel.
Yeah, exactly. Best, maybe the best match ever.
Yeah.
Certainly the most... this can't be real match ever.
Oh yeah. And I'm very glad that you like the Trish match too, because that's one of my absolute favorite matches ever as well. So
loved it. You were not wrong on that. You're not wrong on that at all. That is an excellent match.
There we go. So we did well.
Yeah, two for two.
Yeah. We'll see how long this lasts.
Yeah, exactly.
So that was we did well for each other today.
I thought so. I'm going to have to find, like, we'll have to do Satanico soon, just because he finished below Trish.
Yeah, you'll probably have to fix that.
we'll need to fix that. But, yeah, I'll start thinking about what we want to do next.
Yeah, we will. Yes. And we'll come back and try it again.
And hopefully we won't have as long as a break in between episodes. Holidays and life are crazy things.
Yeah, but yeah, we're back into it now, so we should be coming back at you periodically.
Yes.
Alrighty, well, thanks, Elliot.
And thank you, Stacey.
Thank you, everyone, for listening today, and we'll see you next time.